Hello and welcome to the Walk podcast. My name's Amy Rogers. I'm head of content for Walk Creative, which is our content pillar that looks at all things creative effectiveness. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about the state of creativity. And that's the title of a new report just released by our sister brand, Lions. Now, Lions are very much focused on creativity. They organise the Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity every year, and they help brands to set the foundations for great creativity within their organisations. So to discuss the report and its findings, I'm joined today by Annie Smith, who is Head of Content and Insight for Lions Advisory Division, and also by Raja Rajamannar, who is Chief Marketing Officer at MasterCard. Now, the reason we're talking about this report today is that it sheds a light on how marketers, both brand side and agency side, are feeling about the state of creativity within their organisations and some of the challenges that they're facing, particularly with ensuring that the programmes that they have internally to produce creative work are working and that that work is also effective. So before we bring Raja in, Annie, I'd like to talk to you a bit first about the background of the report and some of the key themes. So could you tell us a bit about the report, kind of how it started and what it's based on?
Yeah, of course. And thank you very much, first of all, for having me to join. So in terms of background, the State of Creativity study was actually born 4 years ago when, as we know, the world got turned upside down following the pandemic. We've always done qualitative research to help us understand the audience needs for our festival programme, which then obviously helps us select topics and speakers. But when the pandemic occurred, the industry obviously had to pivot to adapt to the situation. And we wanted to help unpack some of the biggest challenges and point to opportunities and priorities. So we decided to sort of go public with our first State of Creativity, and it was born from there. So every year since, we've then grown the study, but the goal of it really remains the same, to provide a view on the global trends and drivers for creativity to help businesses, both brand and creative partner side, to really plan for the year ahead. And in terms of how it works, we invite the industry to take part in a survey of about approximately 25 questions. So this year, almost 3,000 people from across the creative ecosystem provided responses, which is incredibly valuable. And we then follow up and conduct a series of qualitative interviews to complement that with creative and marketing leaders. And that adds real richness to what we're finding in the data.
Yeah, it's a great number of people, 3,000 people responding. It is such a great kind of base to have for this kind of study. And having read the report, those qualitative interviews, like they shine a real light on some of the trends that you're pulling out and add some really nice colour to those findings. But the title of the report is Communication Breakdown on the Road to Recovery, which sounds like a rather crucial issue with a kind of sprinkling of optimism, maybe. So before we dig into some of the report's findings and get Raja's perspective on them, this is a kind of industry temperature check, isn't it? So what's the general sentiment like this year, and has that shifted much since last year?
Yeah, so there were some really interesting findings this year. Firstly, as you say, a sense of optimism. So to give context, last year, 60% of survey respondents said that they would be cutting back on their creative investment for 2023. And there was generally a sense of foreboding around sort of issues that a lot of us are experiencing in terms of the rising inflation and prospect of recession. This year, there's a lot more positivity around growth predictions, which is great. So just over half of the survey respondents anticipate stronger growth. And rather than cutting back, almost 70% of the brands we heard from will be maintaining or upping their marketing investment this year. So outwardly, lots of optimism. However, that is sort of tinged with a sense of inward industry tensions that are stalling some of that momentum. And this is where some of the sort of key challenges really come to light. So there's the overarching theme is that this a sense of communication breakdown between different stakeholders on the one hand around the client and sort of agency partner relationship, and then on the other hand to do with mid to junior level employees and more senior level marketers or even senior stakeholders on the brand side. And so that's where that theme of sort of communication breakdown really comes forward.
Okay, yeah. So that's really interesting that there's kind of communication breakdown in lots of different stakeholders and lots of different areas of the industry. Can you talk a little bit about those two tensions, that those two key areas that the tensions fell into? So the client agency relationships and the tensions between kind of senior leadership and more junior employees.
Yeah, absolutely. So that first tension, as I said, is more about the sort of client agency relationship being under strain. In general, brand side respondents were speaking of more ease in the working client agency relationship when we asked this question of sort of to what level is it difficult or easy. But creative partners paint a really different picture. So 45%, almost half of creative partners, said that they find the client agency relationship difficult. And agencies particularly point to tensions or frustrations arising off the back of feeling undervalued and underutilized, as though they're sort of service providers versus true partners. And then the second tension, as you rightly mentioned, is between senior leadership and more junior or mid-level employees on the brand side. So that latter group feeling frustrated with what they deem to be play-it-safe leadership. So there's a sense of feeling frustrated in getting executives to embrace creativity. And as one sort of vocal marketing exec in Australia cited, the biggest challenge is convincing leadership that greater risk leads to greater rewards. So a sort of sense there that there's, you know, between those two different levels, that there's sort of politics and internal frustrations that are challenging creativity. And then what we go on to explore in the report in terms of mitigating those tensions is just how those companies that are predicting growth are investing in creativity and creative culture, really focusing on some of the sort of important foundational steps, such as providing good feedback loops or really taking the time to define and hone what a common language of creativity looks like. And as a result, seeing greater creative effectiveness. So yeah, overall, in summary, optimism for growth, but sort of two key tensions that need addressing, and that sort of overarching theme of a communication breakdown and therefore a need to focus on communication in order to sort of not stall momentum and capitalize on that momentum for growth.
Okay, so Annie, you outlined two tensions there, the first of which was a strain on client agency relationships. This is something we've talked a lot about at WARC. It's got a big impact on effectiveness, and we hear time and time again from both agencies and clients that the relationship between them is key to success. We actually did some research last year with a company called Appraise, and they're a company that assess and score the strength of the relationship between clients and agencies. And we correlated their data with our effectiveness rankings data to see if stronger relationships correlated with award-winning work. And there was a really clear correlation there. So it just put some really nice data behind something that we anecdotally know, right? That the best work often comes from agencies that have great relationships with their clients, where the trust is there. And I know there were some findings in the report around the importance of trust. So Annie, did the survey provide any good stats around kind of the benefits of a good client agency relationship?
Yes, absolutely, it did. So we asked businesses about their growth predictions, and then we also asked them another question about their sense of the level of ease or difficulty in their client agency relationship. And when you look at the patterns, there is an association with ease in the client agency working relationship and better growth predictions. So businesses that find it very easy to work efficiently as a client agency partnership are 4.6 times more likely to predict better growth in 2024. However, on the flip side, those that find it very difficult to work efficiently as an agency client partnership are 3 times more likely to predict a decline in growth in 2024. And then actually, when we also see this sort of connection between a good client agency relationship and streamlining the creative process. So among other aspects, for example, those companies that find it very easy to work efficiently as this client agency partnership are 7 times more likely to find it easier to turn insights into ideas, and 4 times more likely to find it easier to measure the impact of creative work, which is incredibly useful, obviously, in that drive to deliver creatively effective work.
Yeah, that's really clear evidence of the benefits of that relationship. And it really resonates with that appraise research that I mentioned. You know, it feels like across the whole spectrum of the process from, you know, ideation through to measurement, all benefits from this stronger relationship. So Raja, I'd like to bring you in here. Welcome to the podcast. It would be great to hear from you on kind of what MasterCard's relationship is like with its agency partners and how this has evolved over time. And have you seen that evolution kind of impact the effectiveness of creative solutions coming out of the brand?
Yeah, firstly, Amy and Annie, thank you very much for having me on this podcast. Really appreciate the opportunity to share a few thoughts. So firstly, when I look at an agency, I would look at an agency as probably the single biggest factor that enables marketing success for any marketing team. They happen to sit outside of your company, but in reality, they're an extension of your company. They're an extension of my team. So I don't really see them any differently than my own team. They're involved in all the strategic meetings. They're involved in all the operational reviews. They're heavily, heavily involved in it. But that comes as a result of a mindset. And the mindset is that if you look at an agency, they are the guys who really make you look good. They are the ones who really get your campaigns going. And you sort of feel like you're a hero when you're receiving awards and all that stuff. And you're bragging about them. But the reality is the unsung heroes in this entire space is the agencies. If you are very appreciative of the agencies appropriately, if you recognize them for what they are doing, if you show your commitment and if you demonstrate trust, agencies will give their lives for you. When you have that kind of a relationship between you and the agency, they go the extra mile to make sure that we are hitting the ball out of the park. And yeah, that I have found right from the beginning of my career, which is now almost coming up to 4 decades, I found that this is something which consistently works irrespective of the country or the continent or the culture that you are in. And when the agency is inspired, they come up with extraordinary work. And extraordinary work is not just award-winning work. And to Annie's statistics earlier, they actually drive business results. And you know, I have spent a good portion of my career in financial services and now at MasterCard too. We measure ROIs. And there is definitely a correlation between our award-winning campaigns and the ROI versus the non-award-winning campaigns and the ROIs of those. So there is something to it, that creativity actually works brilliantly. Agencies bring that creativity to life, and that's what will drive both the recognition that you get for your marketing prowess, but equally, if not more, the momentum that you get for the business and the results that you drive for the business.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear that from your perspective. We hear a lot from brands about, you know, when they rave about their agency partners when they've had really successful work. But one of the findings from this report was that the brands kind of rate their agency relationships as stronger or kind of find it easier to work with their agency partners than maybe the agency partners do with the brands. So I was interested to hear kind of how you, in fact, it sounds like communication is the key to this, but like how you facilitate kind of them also feeling like they are having a really great relationship with you as well as you with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you look at in the context of, say, MasterCard, McCann has been there with us for now 27 years. So we have very, very long-standing partnerships with them. Because the longer they spend time with the company, the deeper they understand the soul of our brand. Mm. And they are as good as my team members in terms of bringing that to life and then demonstrating it. Now, it's not just about communication. Communication is extremely critical. But it's also a question of how you treat your agency partners. Are you treating them as your equals? Are you treating them as paid labor? Or are you treating them as vendors? That's where I come back to its mindset. They are your equals. And they are making you look good and they are not claiming credit for it. So which means they are better than you in many ways. So you have to treat them very specially, right? And when you acknowledge their roles publicly and privately, they appreciate it. And many of the times when somebody works very hard, a small pat on the back, a public recognition, a small award, they make so much of difference. And that's what I find consistently it works. And in terms of communication, there are two things. One is, does the agency know what exactly are our priorities? Does the agency know what are the real constraints we are operating with? So, for example, there are some quarters where we say our budgets are lesser and we have to move money here and there. Now, if the agency is an integral part of that journey with you, then they look at it as they themselves being a part of the team, part of the process, part of the company, as opposed to things being thrown at them and then say, hey, you know what, my budget has changed, so we are going to take these away. It looks like you are not really treating them as partners, but you are sort of playing around with their commitments and with their schedules. Because they have to plan well in advance for the staffing and for everything else that they do. And you have to be transparent to them. So first thing is, for me, is transparency. Second is inclusion into your company's affairs, into your company's activities, and be there in all the key meetings. That's number two. Three, treat them with respect and acknowledge and recognize their contribution. And lastly, they should know at the same time as you know where things stand, the good, bad, and ugly.
No, that's really interesting. Annie, it sounds like those things really resonate with some of the things that were tensions or frustrations on the from the agency side responses to your survey. Because I know there was, there was definitely tensions felt on the agency side with kind of feeling underutilized and undervalued. Could you run us through some of those tensions and how they resonate with what Raja just said?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so there were under this sort of banner of this agency client strain in the relationship, the three main aspects driving that tension from the agency side, as you said. Firstly, a sense of agencies feeling undervalued and underutilized. Certainly sounds like that's not the relationship that Mastercard and McCann have. And it's really good to hear that there's a real sense of culture and trust and partnership. But many of the people that responded to the survey were sort of frustrated around a sense of feeling like a contractor, in a sense, too much focus on a sort of supplier base relationship rather than a long-term creative partnership, and that impacting the agency's ability to get on and do really brilliant creative work. And then secondly, there was a frustration with poor alignment across partners. So that point where multiple agencies might be tasked with working together, there's different goals or agendas oftentimes, and there was a lot of people sort of citing a sense of working in silos where a lot more direction is actually needed from the client. And finally, and this is a point that Raja mentioned that's absolutely crucial, is that the agencies were citing a sense of a trust deficit. So the fact that there's a lack of trust in pursuing groundbreaking ideas, that there isn't sort of trust put in the creative partner to follow through and be able to deliver upon something that will truly resonate and truly drive growth that brands are seeking, resulting in sort of mediocre, sort of watered down creativity instead. So those are some of the sort of key aspects of tensions that sort of fueled that issue with the client agency relationship.
I have seen a number of companies which want to go for an RFP of the agencies every 3 years by design. And I have also seen RFPs being used as a sword on top of the agency's heads to say, look, here is an RFP coming along where you do better. Or always find that positive reinforcement works much better than negative reinforcement. So threats is not going to get you inspired work. Threats will probably make them do things faster, but that's not what inspired work is all about, number one. Number two, when an agency has that sense of uncertainty, that there's always somebody lurking in the background, and I may lose this business because the next RFP is just around the corner, that's not a good state of mind to be in for them. Nobody would want to be in that mind. So as a client, you have to understand and empathize with your agency to say, what is it that will really drive them to produce their best, and what environment that you would give? It's basic decency. And I think that's something which is, it's obvious at one level, but it's not practiced at many levels.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've seen through our rankings data, that actually you see more of the long-term relationships between the clients and agencies actually resulting in more award-winning work. I want to do the piece of research that actually backs that up with some data rather than like seeing it anecdotally. But I think it's certainly something that we've seen in that, you know, those relationships that have some longevity and they know each other's businesses and they trust each other. And to your point earlier, that the agencies are fully involved in the strategy. They're fully involved in the full life cycle of your marketing strategies, have the better relationships and have more award-winning work come out of those relationships.
Absolutely.
So the second main tension that came out of the report was around getting senior management to embrace some level of risk within their marketing strategies. And so lots of respondents were frustrated with, like Annie said earlier, with a play it safe mindset. Now, we know that creativity is effective. We have lots of research that backs that up now. But we also know that creativity sometimes requires risk taking or some bravery on the brand side. But one thing that you can pull out fairly consistently among award winning brands are those that have taken a risk with their campaigns. And actually, when you speak to some very successful companies, not just in marketing, but in other industries too, they often speak of an internal culture where failure is allowed, it's not punished, and that actually leads to greater success as people are able to take those risks and kind of empowered to take risks. On the flip side, in today's society, it's becoming harder and harder to do. You know, you've got fear of offending and of online backlash, and it's a very real situation for a lot of brands, and that makes taking risks a lot harder for marketing teams and their agencies to kind of sell in those risky ideas, particularly when budgets are under such pressure. So Annie, before we pass over to Raja to talk about his experience in this area, could you kind of summarize the main frustrations that came out of the survey on the brand side in this area?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess there were three kind of clear clusters of frustrations that stood out on the brand side that fuel this sense of sort of play it safe leadership, as we called it. So firstly, a feeling that there is conservative leadership. So mid to junior level marketers in particular were saying how they wanted to experiment more with creativity, but they feel that senior leadership are risk averse. And as one person particularly said, there's a tendency sort of to default to tried and tested ideas. And in fairness, that pressure to just go with the sort of what we know we can do and what's been done before comes from that leadership themselves feeling as if there's such pressure to deliver results. The second tension pointed to this sort of lack of understanding and tied to what I've just said in terms of lack of understanding of creativity's impact at board level. One person sort of quite overtly stated that the CEO is the number one blocker to creativity. So there's this sort of frustration around the rigidity of approach and the lack of understanding around marketing and what it can do for business in terms of other members of the exec not understanding that. Which is really quite detrimental, really, as from what we saw in the survey, those brands that are predicting higher growth in 2024 are 6 times more likely to prioritize creativity and 4.6 times more likely to have a higher marketing spend than in 2023. So it's really important to be investing in creativity, and those brands predicting growth are doing just that. And then just to round off the final cause of the tension, it's around internal politics. So a sense that there isn't always enough of a sort of collaborative culture fostered to provide that psychological safety in putting forward ideas. So a few sort of key elements to the overarching tension of this kind of communication deficit or sort of lack of creativity and play it safe leadership.
Yeah, Raja, it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on this, because I know kind of you've talked before about the CFO being really bought into creativity and how that's really important at MasterCard. But obviously, you've worked in the financial services industry for quite a long time, as you said, which is a fairly regulated industry. So I'm wondering about your perspective on kind of risk taking within the marketing function.
See, firstly, you need to understand why you want to take risk. If you recognize that you want to have work that stands out, it cannot be the same old work like anybody else or like your past work. You have to break new barriers. You have to break the ground. There's absolutely no question about it. And at the end of the day, you need to have enough amount of conviction and confidence that comes to take bold decisions. And that conviction and confidence comes through a detailed analysis, looking at everything logically as well as from the lens of finance, from the lens of technology, from the sense of PR. You look at it in totality and say, where is the risk? And what am I, do I understand fully what the risks are? And am I prepared to take that risk? And do I have contingencies in case that risk materializes? As an example, at MasterCard, and I believe we are the only company, we are definitely the first company, but I believe we are still the only company, which has a risk management function sitting within marketing. They assess different types of risks because the reality is we face risks and we need to understand what risks we are taking. And it's not just creative risk, it's risk across the board. Now, to focus a little bit on the creative aspect, the risk on the creativity side, do we do something which is crazy, so long as it's going to be safe for the company overall, even if there are blips in between, and is it going to give returns that are worth taking the risk in the first place? So as an example, I'll give you. I actually have studied how the brain works and how brain processes words versus symbols. Mm-hmm. And I came to the conclusion that MasterCard's logo, which had word and the colored circles, doesn't work as optimally as it should. And my solution was to drop the name MasterCard from our logo. Now, our brand is present universally. And I'm telling you, my CEO and my board saying, hey guys, I don't want to have MasterCard in our logo anymore. Now, that's a very big decision for the company. The moment I made it, the first thing reaction I had from my CEO was, are you out of your mind? Right? And then I told him why, what study I have done. Why do I believe in my hypothesis? What is the basis for my hypothesis? And what is the risk? And what are the contingency plans I have should things blow up in our face? He looked at the whole thing. He said, okay, I'll go with you. We went to the board. The board looked like both of us have lost our heads. But then again, when we went through the details, they got it. And then they said, okay, fine, do it. We did it. And thank God we did it, because that has really propelled us so significantly forward into how MasterCard brand is perceived and how it is ranked across various studies. That's just one simple example of taking a creative risk, right? Yeah. Or we have gone to some concepts where we said we will create a product for specifically the transgender people. And that was considered, this was a few years back, it was considered at the time there were very different dynamics than they are present now. But even then, it was seen as a very risky move. And we launched this card called True Name Card. And we have even received some hate mail at that point in time. So what we said is, we will stand by our beliefs, our core beliefs and values, and we will manifest them in our marketing, in our programs. And we created this new product called True Name. Believe it or not, today it's one of the most successful launches ever, and it's running in more than 30 countries around the world, very successfully and very profitably. So the, at the time when it was launched, it was very bold. It was very out of step with everything that the industry is doing and everything that we have been doing as a company as well. So it is a big, bold, forward step. But the rewards have paid off. And now we have been both on the brand side and the business side being rated as one of the most successful based on these kind of campaigns and programs that we have been doing around the world.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Can you actually measure the tangible impact of that logo change that you made then? Have you measured that exact change?
So I'll tell you, I'm a chemical engineer by training, so I'm highly quantitative. Mm-hmm. And I also have been in financial services for far too long to do things only by gut feel and by quality. Everything can be quantified. The level of reliability might be low or high. To the extent that we could check, we absolutely did. What is the tangible value contribution to the brand, to the competitive advantage, and to the business growth by dropping our name and getting the logo? That was part of the justification that I had to put across. And also, you state openly, transparently, just like you want to have trust with your various audiences. Like, for example, with the agency people, you also want the trust with your C-suite peers, including your CEO. So you tell them very clearly, this is what the analysis is, this is the methodology, and if I'm a betting guy, the probability that this is right is X%. they appreciate the transparency. You don't want to go and keep on giving them only a very optimistic, rosy picture. You have to call it the way it is. That's when you start earning their trust. And once they trust you, the grief that you get for your future bold programs is far lesser.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great learning for people listening to take away from this. I'm also really interested on that risk management team that you've got in place. So for every one of these bold ideas or these risky ideas, does your risk management team then kind of look at it from a brand risk perspective, from a financial risk perspective, and you know, do they look at it from lots of different angles and then come to you with the potential issues and you work through it together with your agency partners?
So we got a governance process where, for example, the financial risk comes from the finance. I got a CFO and he has got a whole team. So they look at the financial risk. Then we have got on our team legal people. The legal people, they evaluate legal risk. Then the technology people will tell you if I'm starting a new platform or I'm starting off a new marketing stack, they will tell me what are the risks and they assess it from that point of view. And I have got communications team, which is also an integral part of marketing. We call it integrated marketing and communications. That's the name of the group that I manage. So those people, they evaluate it from the point of publicity, from the point of public risk. What could be the backlash in the media? And if it does happen, what is the contingency plan that they have? So it's a whole process. And the process is governed by the risk management group. Yeah, and that's something which also we put it through our annual audits, internal audits, where say, are we adhering to the rules that we said we will follow, the processes and the procedures? Are they being adhered to, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's just a very comprehensive exercise. It's very non-glamorous, but it makes a way for doing things which are truly glamorous without getting killed or getting the backlash.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of about prepared risk taking, isn't it? It's kind of taking the risk, but being prepared alongside it and not just taking a flippant risk.
And that's a very good way of qualifying it. Yes, it's a prepared risk taking.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably a good answer to my next question, which was one of the quotes in the report that I think probably rings true with a lot of brands was one respondent who said, leaders won't accept riskier ideas until they're certain of their impact, but you can't demonstrate effectiveness without taking the leap and doing that work. And so I was going to ask you kind of how you break that cycle and any ideas for kind of encouraging creativity internally, but you know, reducing that feeling of the risk that you're taking. Perhaps putting in a risk management team is one strategy for doing that.
Yeah, so I think it does look like at the start a catch-22 situation, and you have to break into that cycle somewhere or the other. And what I would say is, in this day and age, the science of experimentation, the science of quantification and data analytics has advanced enough to be able to do simulations. And now with Gen AI coming up, the simulations can be at a different level altogether. This is what you talk about, manufacturing synthetic data and test things out to evaluate. So if you say that this is what I'm doing, you are able to model into the future with a certain level of responsibility, with a certain level of credibility, which is more than 50%, obviously. Otherwise, you might as well flip the coin and then, you know. So it's definitely a lot more than 50% probability that you actually assume the risk. And that really helps you as an individual, saying that, am I, as the CMO, taking the right risk? Am I putting the company at risk, etc.?
So the report finishes up with a section around the creative techniques that the leaders are using to support and foster creativity within their organisations. So maybe we can provide listeners with some actionable points to kind of take away from this and implement within their own businesses. Annie, could you summarise for us what those companies that are predicting strong growth are doing that's different from the others, those kind of key tools and techniques for elevating creative effectiveness that the report found?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we looked at that group predicting growth and asked them about impactful techniques, there were sort of three key ones that came out. Firstly, at the top was a sort of robust system to share ideas, so that this idea that any marketer, junior or senior, has the confidence to put forward left field ideas and making sure that there's a set routine in place to allow that to happen. So, for example, when we spoke to McDonald's, it talked about its Creative Hub, which is this online portal where all employees and agency partners are connected and they come together to view and share best-in-class McDonald's briefs and work. The next aspect, which is crucial, was celebrating success. And of course, this isn't just about entering awards, although we would encourage considering Cannes Lions, of course. But we spoke to Kraft Heinz, who talked about their ethos of this idea of communal cheerleading. So be that across WhatsApp or Teams or Slack groups, etc., or on a slightly larger scale across town halls or on even their sort of internal awards that they host. Really sort of taking the time to put structures in place where you recognize new and powerful ideas and, more importantly, the people behind them, which then gives further confidence to others to take sort of leaps and bounds with creativity. And then the final sort of technique being implemented was a real focus on improving feedback loops and, again, having a more robust system for passing feedback on ideas. So really interrogating how feedback is given and rather than, for example, just sort of looking for the bad in an idea and speaking to what's wrong about it and shutting it down, really focusing on the good in it, even if there's sort of a few amounts of aspects that are really crucial that could be taken forward, even if not the whole idea can't be taken forward. And a nice way that James Herman, who's obviously a well-known effectiveness expert and a consultant that we work with in Lions Advisory, he sort of often cites this importance of approaching feedback with a winning as opposed to a not losing mindset, really focusing on the big gains rather than defending against losses and sort of accepting and acknowledging an element of risk in terms of giving that feedback to sort of encourage and enhance an idea. So those were the sort of three aspects that businesses could and should focus on if they're looking to really embed a better culture for creativity.
Yeah, that feedback loops one is interesting. It kind of it speaks to that open culture of allowing failure. You know, if you have a feedback loop that is around finding the good in an idea rather than just saying, no, this is rubbish, it is that environment of accepting an element of failure within a business. So I like that one. The McDonald's is Creative Hub and coming together to view and share best in class ideas. Raja, do you have something similar at MasterCard? I know in the report you talk about something called the Innovation Challenge Program. Could you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah. See, in order to promote creativity and also to showcase to people that we are taking risk, we'll put money behind great ideas and we'll encourage our team members to step up and not be restricted to their job descriptions when they have great ideas. In order to facilitate all this, we launched something called the Innovation Challenge. So every year we have this Innovation Challenge and we say, just share your ideas, whatever you think, and make submissions. And then we have got a group of judges who are all internal people. They get together, they evaluate this concept, they shortlist it, and finally it comes to me. And then they make a presentation to me and I approve some of those. I say they are good, but not good enough, or they are good, but not for now, etc. And once we have that, we actually take it to the market very quickly from there on. As an example, one of the persons on the team, she came up with an idea of MasterCard creating a community for musicians, music artists, who are desperately trying to be discovered. Can we help them create better music using technology? Can we help them market themselves better? And can we help them monetize the content that they are creating? And she had, this is just not a concept, but she had thought through quite a few steps in the entire exercise. I loved it. I said, this is something which is very, very well fitting into what we are trying to do. Go for it. In less than 3 months, we were in the market with a solution called MasterCard Artist Accelerator. And of course, you get some special recognition and all that stuff, which is fantastic. But when other people see it, they are inspired to come up with their own ideas. So it starts an entire innovation cycle that fosters across the entire area. And the same thing we do on the agency side. So the agency come up with ideas. They're not against briefs. We say, you know our company as well as you do. You come up to me with ideas. And they do. And when they give the ideas, we actually go to the market with those ideas.
Yeah.
So that's how we go about it. It's been working very well.
Yeah, it's such a great program and something I feel like we could keep digging into for some time. But unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. A huge thank you to my guests, Raja and Annie, for joining me today. If you'd like to hear more discussion on the State of Creativity report, you can head to lionscreativity.com to sign up to an upcoming webinar. And we'll be back next time with more on the Walk podcast. So if you like what you've heard, do subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you really like what you've heard, leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening.